welcome to Poetry in the Air, the Right Attitude radio show. This program is brought to you by the Office of the Quality Enhancement Plan. The Right Attitude is Savannah State University's campus-wide initiative that enhances student learning by fostering positive attitudes toward writing. I'm your host, Didi Botticelli. Today, we will focus on one of the best-known and most widely read contemporary poets, Nikki Giovanni. We'll begin our show by playing some tracks from Nikki Giovanni's poetry album, Truth Is On Its Way, launched in 1971.
A river, a tending my way.
Childhood remembrances are always a drag if you're black. You always remember things like living in Woodlawn with no inside toilet. And if you become famous or something, they never talk about how happy you were to have your mother all to yourself and how good the water felt when you got your bath from one of those big tubs that folk in Chicago barbecue in. And somehow when you talk about home, it never gets across how much you understood their feelings as the whole family attended meetings about Hollydale. And even though you remember, your biographers never understand your father's pain as he sells his stock and another dream goes. And though you're poor, it isn't poverty that concerns you. And though they fought a lot, it isn't your father's drinking that makes any difference, but only that everybody is together and you and your sister have happy birthdays and very good Christmases. And I really hope no white person ever has cause to write about me, because they never understand black love is black wealth. And they'll probably talk about my hard childhood and never understand that all the while, I was quite happy. All I gotta do is sit and wait, and it's gonna find me. All I gotta do is sit and wait, if I can learn how. What I need to do is sit and wait, 'cause I'm a woman, sit and wait. What I got to do is sit and wait, 'cause I'm a woman, it'll find me. You get yours and I'll get mine, if I learn to sit and wait. You got yours, I want mine, and I'm gonna get it, 'cause I got to get it, 'cause I need to get it, if I learn how. Thought about calling for it on the phone. Asked for delivery, but they didn't have it. Thought about going to the store to get it. Walked to the corner, but they didn't have it. Called your name in my sleep. Sitting and waiting, thought you would awake me. Called your name lying in my bed, but you didn't have it. Offered to go get it, but you didn't have it. So I'm sitting. All I know is sitting and waiting, waiting and sitting, 'cause I'm a woman. All I know is sitting and waiting, 'cause I got to wait, wait for it to find me.
You've been listening to one of Nikki Giovanni's most beloved poems, Nikki Rosa, followed by All I Gotta Do. The album's name is Truth Is On Its Way, and it was released following a shift in Giovanni's work toward jazz and gospel as musical accompaniment for her poetry. Her work was expanding, and she was making efforts to support her fellow black female writers. Her dedication to the work of female artists of color is also evident in this next track, Poem for Aretha, written for Aretha Franklin.
Thank you.
Because nobody deals with Aretha, a mother with four children having to hit the road. They always say after she comes home, but nobody ever says what it's like to get on a plane for a three-week tour, the elation of the first couple of audiences, the good feeling of exchange, the running on the high you get from singing good and loud and long, telling the world what's on your mind. Then comes the eighth show on the sixth day, the beginning to smell like that plane or bus, the if you forget your toothbrush in one spot, you can't brush until the second show, the strangers pulling at you cause they love you, but you having no love to give back, the singing the same songs night after night, day after day, and if you read the gossip columns, the rumors that your husband is only after your fame, the wondering if your children will be glad to see you, and maybe the not caring if they are, the scheming to get out of just one show and go just one place where some dodo doopity-dook won't say, just sing one song, please. Nobody mentions how it feels to become a freak because you have talent and how no one gives a damn how you feel, but only cares that Aretha Franklin is here. Like maybe that'll stop chickens from frying, eggs from being laid, or crackers from hating. And if you say you're lonely or scared or tired, how they always just say, aw, come off it. Or, did you see how they love you? Did you see, huh, did you? Which most likely has nothing to do with you anyway. And I'm not saying Aretha shouldn't have talent, and I'm certainly not saying she should quit singing. But as much as I love her, I'd vote yes to her doing four concerts a year and staying home or doing whatever she wants and making records, because it's a shame the way we're killing her. We eat up artists like there's going to be a famine at the end of those 3 minutes, when there are, in fact, an abundance of talents just waiting. Let's put some of the giants away for a while and deal with them like they have a life to lead. Aretha doesn't have to relive Billie Holiday's life, doesn't have to relive Donna Washington's death, but who's going to stop the pattern? She's more important than her music if they must be separated, and they should be separated when she has to pass out before anyone recognizes she needs a rest. And I say I need Aretha's music. She's undoubtedly the one person who put everyone on notice. She revived Johnny Ace and remembered Lil Green. Aretha sings I Say a Little Prayer, and Dion doesn't want to hear it anymore. Aretha sings Money Won't Change You, but James Brown can't sing Respect. The advent of Aretha pulled Ray Charles from Marlboro country and back into the blues, made Nancy Wilson try one more time, forced Dion to make a choice. She opted for the movies, and Diana Ross had to get an Afro wig. Pushed every black singer into blackness and Negro entertainers into Negroness. You couldn't jive when she said, you make me feel. The Blazers had to reply, gotta let a man be a man. Aretha said, when my show was in the lost and found, you came along to claim it. And Janis Joplin said, maybe. There has been no musician whom her very presence hasn't affected. When Humphrey wanted her to campaign, she said, a woman's only human. And he pressured James Brown. They removed Otis Redding because the combination was too strong. The Impressions had to say, Lord have mercy, we're moving on up. The black songs started coming from the singers on stage and the dancers in the streets. Aretha was the riot, was the leader. If she had said, come, let's do it, it would have been done. Temptations say, why don't we think about it, think about it, think about it. Gonna never get rap. He's a note, turned himself into a million songs. Listen to Aretha call his name. He's a light, turned himself into our homes. Look how well we see since he came. Gonna never get rap. He's a spirit. Turn Pisces to Aries, Alpha to Omega. Let it start. They can never get rap, cause he's a man. Turned himself into black women, and we turn little hymns loose on the world.
Before the break, you heard Second Rap Poem by Nikki Giovanni, which was preceded by Poem for Aretha. Nikki Giovanni was born in Knoxville, Tennessee in 1943. She published her first book of poems in 1967, then graduated with a bachelor's degree in history from Fisk University, an HBCU in Nashville, Tennessee in 1968. From here, she went on to graduate school at the University of Pennsylvania and Columbia University. Since then, she published more than 30 books, as well as released a number of spoken word and poetry albums. From Nikki Giovanni's poetry album, The Way I Feel, released in 1975, let's sit back and enjoy The Way I Feel and The Women Gather.
I'm happier when I make love with you and have enough left over to smile at my doorman. I've realized I'm fulfilled like a big fat cow who was just picked for carnation contentment when you kiss your special place right behind my knee. I'm as glad as mortar on a brick that knows another brick is coming when you walk through my door. Most times when you're around, I feel like a note Roberta Flack is going to sing. In my mind, you're a clock, and I'm the second hand sweeping round you 60 times an hour, 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, and an extra day in leap year, cause that's the way, that's the way, that's the way I feel about you. I'm happier when I smile, because that's the way I feel. I'm as glad as mortar on a brick that knows another brick is coming, because that's the way I feel about you. I'm content when you kiss your special place, because that's the way I feel. That's the way I feel. I feel. Women gather because it is not unusual to seek comfort in our hours of stress. A man must be buried. It is not unusual that the old bury the young, though it is an abomination. It is not strange that the unwise and the ungentle carry the banner of humaneness, though it is a castration of the spirit. It no longer shatters the intellect that those who make war call themselves diplomats. We are no longer surprised that the unfaithful pray loudest every Sunday in every church and sometimes in rooms facing east, though it is a sin and a shame. So how do we judge a man? Most of us love from our need to love, not because we find someone deserving. Most of us forgive because we have trespassed, not because we are magnanimous. Most of us comfort because we need comforting. Our ancient rituals demand that we give what we hope to receive. And how do we judge a man? We learn to greet when meeting, to cry when parting, and to soften our words at times of stress. The women gather with cloth and ointments, their busy hands bowing to laws that decree. Willow shall stand swaying but unbroken against even the determined wind of death. We judge a man by his dreams, not alone his deeds. We judge a man by his intent, not alone his shortcomings. We judge a man because it is not unusual to know him through those who love him. The women gather strangers to each other because they have loved a man. It is not unusual to shift through ashes and find an unburnt pitcher.
In addition to being a world-renowned poet, Giovanni is a Grammy-nominated artist, receiving critical acclaim for her recorded poetry albums, portions of which we've been listening to today. Today, she continues her work as a poet, educator, speaker, and activist. Now let's continue listening to selections from her album, The Way I Feel, with The Life I Led, followed by When I Die.
Upper arms will grow flabby. It's true of all the women in my family. I know that the purple veins, like dead fish in the Seine, will dot my legs one day, and my hands will wither while my hair turns grayish white. I know that. One day my teeth will move when my lips smile, and a flutter of hair will appear below my nose. I hope my skin doesn't change to those blotchy colors. I want my menses to be undifficult. I very much prefer staying firm and slim, to grow old like a vintage wine fermenting in old wooden vats with style. I'd like to be exquisite, I think. I will look forward to grandchildren and my flowers, all my knickknacks in their places, and that quiet of the bombs not falling in Cambodia suddenly over my sagging breast. I hope my shoulder finds a head that needs nestling, and my feet find a footstool after a good soaking with Epsom salts. I hope I die warmed by the life that I try to live.
Oh,
When I die, I hope no one who ever hurt me cries. And if they cry, I hope their eyes fall out, and a million maggots that have made up their brains crawl from the empty holes and devour the flesh that covered the evil that passed itself off as a person that I probably tried to love. When I die, I hope every worker in the National Security Council, the Interpol, the FBI, CIA Foundation for the Development of Black Women gets an extra bonus and maybe takes one day off and maybe even ask why they didn't work as hard for us as they did them. But it always seems to be that way. Please don't let them read Nikki Rosa. Maybe just let some black woman who called herself my friend go around and collect each and every book. And let some black man who said it was negative of me to want him to be a man collect every picture and poster. And let them burn those as they did me while I tried to live. And as soon as I die, I hope everyone who loved me learns the meaning of my death, which is a simple lesson. Don't do what you do very well, very well, and enjoy it. It scares white folk and makes the black ones truly mad. But I do hope someone tells my son his mother liked little old ladies with their blue dresses and hats and gloves. That sitting by the window to watch dawn come up is valid. That smiling at an old man and petting a dog don't detract from manhood. Do somebody please tell him, I knew all along that what would be is what will be, but I wanted to be a new person, and my rebirth was stifled, not by the master, but the slave. And if ever I touched a life, I hope that life knows that I know that touching was and still is and will always be the true revolution.
Welcome back. You're listening to Poetry in the Air, the Right Attitude radio show. I'm your host, Dee Dee Botticelli. Today, our show is dedicated to Nikki Giovanni, one of the most influential contemporary poets and cultural icons working today. Let's hear an interview with Nikki Giovanni from her visit to Savannah State University in 2014.
Hello, this is Sylvia Alls.
Dr. Giovanni, thank you so much.
Nikki.
Nikki, you want me to call you?
Yeah, Nikki.
Okay.
That's my name.
Okay. Thank you, Nikki, for coming out here and doing this interview with me. I really appreciate it. You mentioned something very interesting. Even in schools, when it comes to black history, they just kind of scratch the surface. They don't delve into what's important. And like I said, you mentioned something interesting is that the young people today, they look at black history as something that's not that important. They don't take it as seriously as they should. Mm-hmm. And the question I want to ask real quick, and I just thought of it, is even down to today, do you think that being a black rights activist in today's age would have that person viewed as a racist?
Of course not. First of all, the history of black Americans is an incredible part of America, because if you subtract even at slave labor, and that would be African, you know, because we had that whole middle passage, you know, before that second generation is going to be American. But even if we subtracted slave labor, then we don't get the amber waves of grain, as it were. We don't get the land being developed. And nobody wants to give anybody credit for that. But one of the reasons, actually, if I may answer a question you didn't ask, one of the reasons you have to read your poets and that you have to read your novelists and that you have to listen to the songs. And even today, you know, people don't like hip-hop because hip-hop tells the truth. And they say, oh, hip-hop is vulgar. Well, you know, you have to call an MF an MF, and I couldn't agree more. But hip-hop tells the truth about life in the cities. It does. Yeah. And if you keep going back, the blues tells the story, but if you go back, the spirituals tell the story. And all of that becomes incredibly important because sometimes the history doesn't. Because the people that believe in a lot of that, John Hope Franklin is a great historian, by the way, and he's a Fisk guy, you know, he went to Fisk, and then he went over to Duke. And I think, and I don't think, John tells great history, but most people aren't going to read that. But almost anybody will read Beloved. Because, you know, Toni Morrison is going to do that. So even I was mentioning the history of Lincoln Heights. It's in a poem that I wrote for the Isley Brothers. I grew up with them, called Brother, 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 and just try to deal with what they did, the city that they came from and what they did. And you have to read the poetry. You just have to, you have to know. You have to read a Gwen Brooks to know what was going on in Chicago. And there are going to be, you know, traditional histories, mm-hmm. but mostly it's going to come through your novels and through your you'd have to read Lorraine Hansberry.
Yeah.
I mean, just seeing A Raisin in the Sun,
mm-hmm.
and all of a sudden we're the racists, but that white man comes and he wants to buy the house because he doesn't want the black people living mm-hmm. in his community. We've never seen black people try to buy white people out because
right.
we don't care. We are not the racists.
Mm-hmm.
We are the people that welcome the people. They're the other people that exclude. So you have to read your fiction.
Yeah, and I agree. Last semester, I actually had a class, African American Literature,
mm-hmm.
and we studied Lorraine Hansberry. We read Raisin in the Sun.
Yeah.
We read about you, Toni Morrison.
Oh, yeah.
We read, oh goodness, I can't believe I forgot his name. But we read
Leroy Jones.
Leroy Jones was in there too.
Yeah.
We read a lot of great African American poets, mm-hmm. and what shocked me, of course, was that the majority of the class didn't care to know, you know, and it was kind of sobering, like, where do you get this from? Does it come from the house? You know, does it come from your upbringing that you don't care about your own history and about yourself? And, you know, it just made me think, you know, what can we do today to get young people involved? What do you think that we as a society, as the black community, what can we do to get the black youth today to be interested?
I think you have to tell them. I something that I don't know. I don't deal with little kids or young kids, so I don't know what they know. I know people don't go to church so much, and I know churches have become business much more than, for example, spiritual homes and things like that. I think you have to tell the story, and you can only preach to the saved.
Mm-hmm.
You can only tell the story to the people that want to do it. But I am not, I'm not the kid that ever sits and thinks, oh, the kids don't care. It's for us to find a way to present it. They don't like their spinach either.
Mm-hmm.
But if we let them continue to eat, you know, fast food, they're all going to be dead very soon, so it doesn't matter what we do. They're blown up. You look at them. I mean, that's unnatural fat on these kids.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be careful what you put in your mind, and you have to be careful what you put in your body. And obviously the crisis, and Michelle Obama is trying to take it up, but the crisis is not that the kids don't care. It's that cheap food fills you up, but not as much as good food. And so they buy cheap food because they don't have the money to buy good food. And all the time, you know, we grew up on greens and cornbread and things like that. Well, that's all good for you. We live forever. You
mm-hmm.
know, if nobody would have killed us, you know, look at my generation. We live forever. We don't have bad diseases. These kids have all got diabetes. They're 12, 13 years old. They're weighing 300 pounds. They're blown up. And everything is supersized. So obviously the government, which needs to take care of a number of things, but one of the things they need to take care of is what is actually in the food.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really cheaper. It's cheaper to buy a McDonald's or a double burger, you know, than it is to go to the store and buy, for example, a really good piece of beef or mm-hmm. a really, you know, we're here in Savannah, so I'm sure, you know, fish is just out there, you know, but you have to be able to cook it too.
Mm-hmm.
So where's the cooking class? And we were laughing because I'm a Southerner, so I love to cook. And
mm-hmm.
when my son was a little boy, and he's grown, he's an old man now, but I cooked for Thomas because I thought he should know how to cook. Well, if you're going to cook with a kid, the one thing you have to do is you have to eat what they cook.
Mm-hmm.
And so every Wednesday was Thomas's day to cook. And so whatever he cooked, because my father had a stroke and I moved back home, and whatever he cooked is what we had to eat. And I was serious about that, because how's he going to learn to cook?
Right.
If you know, how's he going to learn to think if you don't talk to him? And then if you talk to him, that means he has to listen. Right? And you have to listen to what he has to say, and you have to respond. I mean, I don't know where parenting is going. I just can't blame the kids. I think the kids are all right. And I think that the kids are probably about 10 years behind where they might be if parents were paying a little more attention. But a lot of these parents were traumatized because the parents of these kids have been in war forever. And now they've been in Afghanistan, that other thing, Iran. You know, we went from World War I to Korea to Vietnam. You know, it's all been war. And so you've got all these traumatized people, and the government doesn't want to take credit for that. They don't want to take responsibility, I should say. They take credit for that. And I think that it's difficult to be a parent under those circumstances. You're nervous.
You're welcome. There's one last question. You've accumulated so many accolades throughout your life, so many awards, and just things like that. What or who keeps you humble?
well, I'm sane, you know, and I've always valued my sanity, and I enjoy my life, and I do what I started out being what I am, which is I'm a history buff. I really love it. I was a history major at Fisk, and I like to tell the stories, and that's what I do, and so I have to enjoy it. I seldom find myself in a place that I'm not comfortable, you know, but I like to remind people, you know, it's life is interesting, and if your kids buy into, and that's all of you, black and white. I teach at Virginia Tech. We're a predominantly white institution. Mm-hmm. All of the black people on campus speak to each other because there's so few of us. That's the truth. And I like Tech a lot. But it's just very important that we try to show the younger generation, you know, number one, you have to be sane. Mm-hmm. You know, that sanity is everything. And number two, you have to keep asking, what's the story? You just have to keep asking that, because we can, you know, I can share some things that I know, and you know, I'm sitting here right now and I'm enjoying talking to you all, and when you get tired, you get up and walk away. But I'm hoping that the next time something comes up or you look at something in the paper, whether it's this crap with the water, because this is very serious. This is incredibly, and especially for we who are women. It's important for men, but men don't have babies. Men make babies. And we who are women deal with water in a very, very different way. And I can't think of anything. I'm very, very fortunate. My son is healthy. But I can't think of anything worse than you have a baby, all that you go through, and then the kid comes out, he's blind, or his brain is outside of his head, and he's going to die in a couple of hours, or, you know, and poisoning your water is a part of it. So if for nothing else than women, we have to be aware of the world in which we live in, because we are the life givers. We are the ones that carry that, and we are the ones that are going to go through a lot of, you know, having babies is not, I never did say how people had two. Didn't you remember how the first one? But you said, how did I stay humble? I mean, humble is not like, oh, really? Because I'm smart, I am good looking, I am articulate, and I'm a good writer. And that's who I am. I don't have a weak personality, so I don't have to browbeat you or, you know, try to be something that I don't. I know how to stop and get my own coffee. I know how to open my own door. I'm not a fool. And so I enjoy my life, and I think that I'm a human being like anybody else. I have to stand in line to get my movie ticket like everybody else, and it just makes sense, you know. Mm-hmm. Anything else gonna make you crazy. And I never wanted to be crazy. I just never did.
Well, thank you, Nikki.
Thank you.
Welcome back to Poetry in the Air. We have just listened to an interview with Nikki Giovanni, conducted by Sylvia Alls, a Savannah State University student in mass communications. For the next portion of our show, we'll play for you several of our favorite Nikki Giovanni poems, read by Savannah State University faculty and students.
I'm Camila Martin, a professor of African American literature in the College of Liberal Arts and Social Sciences at Savannah State University. Today, I will read Mothers and Walking Down Park, written by Nikki Giovanni. The last time I was home to see my mother, we kissed, exchanged pleasantries and unpleasantries, pulled a warm, comforting silence around us, and read separate books. I remember the first time I consciously saw her. We were living in a three-room apartment on Burns Avenue. Mommy always sat in the dark. I don't know how I knew that, but she did. That night, I stumbled into the kitchen, maybe because I've always been a night person, or perhaps because I had wet the bed. She was sitting on a chair. The room was bathed in moonlight, diffused through those thousands of panes landlords who rented to people with children were prone to put in windows. She may have been smoking, but maybe not. Her hair was three-quarters her height, which made me a strong believer in the Samson myth, and very black. I'm sure I just hung there by the door. I remember thinking, what a beautiful lady. She was very deliberately waiting, perhaps for my father to come home from his night job, or maybe for a dream that had promised to come by. Come here, she said. I'll teach you a poem. I see the moon. The moon sees me. God bless the moon, and God bless me. I taught it to my son, who recited it for her, just to say we must learn to bear the pleasures as we have borne the pains. Walking Down Park, written by Nikki Giovanni. Walking down Park, Amsterdam, or Columbus, do you ever stop to think what it looked like before it was an avenue? Did you ever stop to think what you walked before you rode subways to the stock exchange? We can't be on the stock exchange. We are the stock exchanged. Did you ever maybe wonder what grass was like before they rolled it into a ball and called it Central Park, where syphilitic dogs and their two-legged tubercular masters fertilized the corners and sidewalks? Ever want to know what would happen if your life could be fertilized by a love thought from a loved one who loves you? Ever look south on a clear day and not see Times Square, but see tall birch trees with sycamores touching hands and see gazelles running playfully after lions? Ever hear the antelope bark from the third floor apartment? Ever did you ever sit down and wonder about what freedom would bring? It's so easy to be free. You start by loving yourself, then those who look like you. All else will come naturally. Ever wonder why so much asphalt was laid in so little space? Probably so we would forget the Iroquois, Algonquin, and Mohicans who could caress the earth. Ever think what Harlem would be if our herbs and roots and elephant ears grew, sending a cacophony of sound to us? The parrot parroting, black is beautiful, black is beautiful. Owls sending out, who's making love, and me and you just sitting in the sun trying to find a way to get a banana tree from one of the monkeys, koala bears in the trees laughing at our listlessness. Ever think it's possible for us to be happy?
My name is Kiara Lewis. I'm a senior here at Savannah State University, majoring in English. Today I'll be reading two poems by Nikki Giovanni. The first one is called Knoxville, Tennessee. I always like summer best. You can eat fresh corn from daddy's garden and okra and greens and cabbage and lots of barbecue and buttermilk and homemade ice cream at the church picnic and listen to gospel music outside at the church homecoming and go to the mountains with your grandmother and go barefooted and be warm all the time, not only when you go to bed and sleep. The second poem is called Love Is by Nikki Giovanni. Some people forget that love is tucking you in and kissing you goodnight, no matter how young or old you are. Some people don't remember that love is listening and laughing and asking questions, no matter what your age. Few recognize that love is commitment, responsibility. No fun at all unless love is you and me.
Hello, my name is Diamond Cozart, senior at Savannah State University, majoring in English. Today I will be reading For Sandra in Winter Poem by Nikki Giovanni. The first one is For Sandra. I wanted to write a poem that rhymes, but revolution doesn't lend itself to bebopping. Then my neighbor, who thinks I hate, asked, do you ever write tree poems? I like trees. So I thought, I'll write a beautiful green tree poem. Peek from my window to check the image. Notice that the schoolyard was covered with asphalt. No green, no trees grow in Manhattan. Then, well, I thought the sky. I'll do a big blue sky poem. But all the clouds have winged low since no dick was elected. So I thought again, and it occurred to me, maybe I shouldn't write at all. But clean my gun and check my kerosene supply. Perhaps these are not poetic times at all. The second poem is Winter. Once a snowflake fell on my brow, and I loved it so much and kissed it, and it was happy, I called it cousins. Cousins and brothers in a web of snow engulfed me, then I reached to love them all, and I squeezed them, and they became a spring rain, and I stood perfectly still and was a flower.
Greetings. My name is Sierra Walton, and I am a junior here at Savannah State University. Today I will be reading two poems. The first one is called Poetry by Nikki Giovanni. Poetry is motion, graceful as a fawn, gentle as a teardrop, strong like the eye, finding peace in a crowded room. We poets tend to think our words are golden, though emotion speaks too, loudly to be defined by silence. Sometimes after midnight or just before the dawn, we sit typewriter in hand, pulling loneliness around us, forgetting our lovers or children who are sleeping, ignoring the weary weariness of our own logic, to compose a poem. No one understands it. It never says, love me, for poets are beyond love. It never says, accept me, for poems seek not acceptance but controversy. It only says, I am, and therefore I concede that you are too. A poem is pure energy horizontally contained between the mind of the poet and the ear of the reader. If it does not sing, discard the ear, for poetry is song. If it does not delight, discard the heart, for poetry is joy. If it does not inform, then close off the brain, for it is dead. If it cannot heed the insistent message that life is precious, which is all we poets wrapped in our loneliness are trying to say. The second poem is Choices by Nikki Giovanni. If I can't do what I want to do, then my job is to not do what I don't want to do. It's not the same, but it's the best I can do. If I can't have what I want, then my job is to want what I've got and be satisfied that at least there is something more to want. Since I can't go where I need to go, then I must go where the signs point through always understanding parallel movement isn't lateral. When I can't express what I really feel, I practice feeling what I can express, and none of it is equal. I know, but that's why mankind alone among the animals learns to cry.
You have just heard poems by Nikki Giovanni, read to us by our own Savannah State faculty member, Dr. Camila Martin, and students Kiara Lewis, Diamond Cozart, and Sierra Walton. Hello, and welcome back to Poetry in the Air. We will continue our show focusing on the poetry of Nikki Giovanni, with Dr. Cheryl Davenport-Dozier, president of Savannah State University, who will be reading for us the poems Ego Tripping and Like a Ripple on the Pond.
I am Cheryl Davenport-Dozier, the president of Savannah State University. I will read two poems by Nikki Giovanni, Ego Tripping and Like a Ripple on a Pond. Ego Tripping. I was born in the Congo. I walked to the Fertile Crescent and built the Sphinx. I designed a pyramid so tough that a star that only glows every 100 years falls into the center, given divine perfect light. I am bad. I sat on the throne drinking nectar with Allah. I got hot and sent an ice age to Europe to cool my thirst. My oldest daughter is Nefertiti. The tears from my birth pains created the Nile. I am a beautiful woman. I gazed on the forest and burnt out the Sahara Desert with a packet of goat's meat and a change of clothes. I crossed it in 2 hours. I am a gazelle, so swift you can't catch me. For a birthday present, when he was 3, I gave my son Hannibal an elephant. He gave me Rome for Mother's Day. My strength flows ever on. My son Noah built Newark, and I stood proudly at the helm as we sailed on a soft summer day. I turned myself into myself and was Jesus. Men intone my loving name. All praises, I am the one who would save. I sold diamonds in my backyard. My bowels deliver uranium. The fillings from my fingernails are semi-precious jewels. On a trip north, I caught a cold and blew my nose, giving oil to the Arab world. I am so hip, even my errors are correct. I sailed west to reach east and had to round off the earth as I went. The hair from my head thinned and gold was laid across 3 continents. I am so perfect, so divine, so ethereal, so surreal. I cannot be comprehended except by my permission. I mean I can fly like a bird in the sky, like a ripple on a pond. 1 ounce of truth benefits like ripples on a pond. 1 ounce of truth benefits like a ripple on a pond. 1 ounce of truth benefits like ripples on a pond. As things change, remember my smile. The old man said, my time is getting near. The old man said, my time is getting near. He looked at his dusty, cracked boots to say, sister, my time is getting near. And when I'm gone, remember I smiled. When I'm gone, remember I smiled. I'm glad my time is getting there. The baby cried, wanting some milk. The baby cried, needing some milk. The baby, he cried for wanting. His mother kissed him gently. When I came, they sang a song. When I was born, they sang a song. When I was saved, they sang a song. Remember, I smiled when I'm gone. Remember, I smiled when I'm gone. Sing a good song when I'm gone. We ain't got long to stay. Nikki Giovanni, one of my sheroes. I listened to Nikki Giovanni as I was leaving high school and college, kind of on my own, finding my way. And her, like a ripple on a pond, was an album. I still have the album. She was backed up by the New York City Community Choir, the gospel that was so powerful. And then her voice would come as she read that poem. It was pointed. It was just so powerful. But what's most inspirational about Nikki Giovanni was she connected us to the motherland. That at a time when we were out there trying to find our way as Black people, Black power, where are we? Where are we from? Nikki Giovanni's words, the powerful way she delivered the words connected us to the motherland. She talked about the pyramids. She talked about Nefertiti. She talked about Hannibal. She talked about the places that I've since been able to travel to. Nikki Giovanni was talking about Sankofa before we knew Sankofa. She was connecting our past to our present, and she was speaking into the future. And that's why her poems are still so relevant today. Nikki Giovanni speaks truth to power. Nikki Giovanni speaks to women. She speaks to children. She speaks to men. Nikki Giovanni speaks about herself, which allows us and me to see myself within her poems. And Nikki Giovanni speaks about living in the life that many of us, and for me, a life that I know was difficult at times, that she speaks to a way out. She always sees that there is a way out for us as women, as people. I still admire her, her greatness, and how she's able to use words through poetry, through prose, and through her speeches to just light up a place and help us to just think, to reflect, and to just resonate on those powerful words that she puts together. I see her as a sister, my sister, Nikki Giovanni.
To close out today's show, we want to leave you with some recorded material from Nikki Giovanni's address to the SSU community when she visited the campus last year. In this part of her talk, she discusses and reads her poem, Quilting the Black-Eyed Pea, We're Going to Mars.
I wrote a poem for NASA. It's called Quilting the Black-Eyed Pea, We're Going to Mars. We're going to Mars for the same reason Marco Polo rocketed to China, for the same reason Columbus trimmed his sails on the Dream of Spices, for the very same reason Shackleton was enchanted with penguins, for the reason we fall in love. It's the only adventure. We're going to Mars because Perry couldn't go to the North Pole without Matthew Henson, because Chicago couldn't be a city without Jean-Baptiste Desaba, because George Washington Carver and his peanut were the right partners for Booker T. It's a life-seeking thing. We're going to Mars because whatever is wrong with us will not get right with us, so we journey forth carrying the same baggage, but every now and then leaving one little bitty thing behind. Maybe you drop torturing hunchbacks here, maybe drop lynching Billy Budd there, maybe not whipping Uncle Tom to death, maybe resisting global war,
One day looking for prejudice to slip, one day looking for hatred to tumble by the wayside, one day maybe the whole community will no longer be vested in who sleeps with whom. One day maybe the Jewish community will be at rest, the Christian community will be content, the Muslim community will be at peace, and all the rest of us will get great meals on holy days and learn new songs and sing in harmony. We're going to Mars because it gives us a reason to change. If Mars came here, it would be ugly. Nations would band together to hunt down and kill Martians. And being the stupid, undeserving life forms that we are, we would also hunt down and kill what would be termed Martian sympathizers. As if the fugitive slave law wasn't bad enough. As if the so-called war on terrorism isn't pitiful now. When do we learn, and what does it take to teach us? Things cannot be what we want, when we want, as we want. Other people have ideas and inputs, and why won't they leave right now alone? The future is ours to take. We're going to Mars because we have the hardware to do it. We have the rockets and the fuel and the money and the stuff. And the only reason NASA is holding back is they don't know if what they send out will be what they get back. So let me slow this down. Mars is 1 year of travel to get there, plus 1 year of living on Mars, plus 1 year to return to Earth. Equals 3 years of Earthlings being in a tight space, going to an unknown place with an unsure welcome awaiting them. Tired muscles, unknown and unusual foods, harsh conditions, and no known landmarks to keep them human. Only a hope and a prayer that they will be shadowed beneath the benign hand. And there is no historical precedent for that except this. The trip to Mars can only be understood through Black Americans, let's say. The trip to Mars can only be understood through Black Americans. The people who were captured and enslaved immediately recognized the men who chained and whipped them and herded them into ships so tightly packed that there was no reason to turn, no privacy to respect, no tears to fall without landing on the state of other souls, no. The men with whips and chains were understood to be killers, feared to be cannibals, known to be sexual predators. The captured knew they were in trouble, in an unknown place without communicable abilities with a violent and capricious species. But they could look out and still see signs of home. They could still smell the sweetness in the air. They could see the clouds floating above the land they loved. But they reached a point where the captured could not only not look back, they had no idea which way back might be. There was nothing in the middle of the deep blue water to indicate which way home might be. And it was that moment when a decision had to be made. Do they continue forward with a resolve to see this thing through, or do they embrace the waters and find another world? In the belly of the ship, a moan was heard, and someone picked up that moan, and a song was raised, and that song would offer comfort and hope and tell the story. When we go to Mars, it's the same thing. It's middle passage. When the rocket red glares, the astronauts will be able to see themselves pull away from Earth. As the ship goes deeper, they will see a sparkle of blue. And then one day, not only will they not see her, they won't know which way to look. And that's why NASA needs to call Black America. They need to ask us, how did you calm your fears? How were you able to decide you were human, even when everything said you were not? How did you find the comfort in the face of the improbable to make the world you came to your world? How was your soul able to look back and wonder? And we will tell them what to do. To successfully go to Mars and back, you will need a song. Take some Billie Holiday for the sad days and some Charlie Parker for the happy ones. But always keep at least one good spiritual for comfort. You will need a slice or two of meatloaf if you can manage and if you can manage it, some fried chicken in a shoebox for a nice, moist lemon pound cake. A bottle of beer, because no one should go that far without a beer. And maybe a six-pack so that if there is life on Mars, you can share. Popcorn for the celebration when you land, while you wait on your land legs to kick in. And as you climb down from the ladder, from your spaceship to the Martian surface, look to your left, and there you'll see a smiling community, quilting a black-eyed pea, watching you descend.
Nikki Giovanni demonstrates that we must be aware of our world and of our history in order to understand our world. For Giovanni, this is what poetry is for. We hope that this show has encouraged you to pick up one of Nikki Giovanni's books or even try writing some poetry of your own. You can listen to the Right Attitude shows on our website, qep.savannahstate.edu. See you on the next Poetry in the Air.